move to the final case this morning, the cases, starting with U.S. versus Sanchez-Gonzalez.
Good morning.
Okay, Ms. Siegler.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I'm Allison Siegler from the University of Chicago Law School's Mandel Legal Aid Clinic, and I represent appellant Pedro Sanchez-Gonzalez. I'm also conducting the oral argument on behalf of appellant Jaime Reyes-Hernandez. For three reasons, we ask this court to hold that district judges have discretion to consider fast-track disparities and to remand and vacate the sentences and remand these cases for resentencing. First, Kimbrough has changed the law since this court held that district courts are prevented from considering fast-track disparities because Congress explicitly recognized them as warranted. But even if this court continues to hold that Congress warranted any fast-track disparities created by the PROTECT Act, there are two completely different reasons, grounds for remand in this case, that this court has actually never previously addressed. First, Congress has never warranted the disparities that are created by charge bargaining fast-track programs. And so at a minimum, courts have discretion to take those disparities into account under 3553A6. And second, separate and apart from 3553A6, sentencing courts in Chicago have another aspect of discretion given to them by Congress, which is the discretion to determine under 3553A's parsimony provision that a below-guideline sentence is sufficient but not greater than necessary to meet the purposes of punishment, especially considering the fact that 80% of the immigration cases in this country are prosecuted in fast-track districts. First, I want to address the congressional policy argument. Kimbrough has changed the law since this court essentially carved out an exception to district court discretion in the fast-track disparities context. The Supreme Court's holding that Congress did not expressly require the Sentencing Commission and courts to maintain the crack powder disparity undermines any argument that Congress explicitly required courts to maintain the fast-track disparity.
Well, how do those fast-track jurisdictions gain that status?
Of course, Your Honor. Fast-track jurisdictions gain that status by authorization of the Attorney General, first through an application by the individual U.S. Attorney's offices.
And that's not happened here, though, right?
That is correct. And we're not asking that Chicago become a fast-track district. What we're asking, Your Honor, is simply that sentencing courts in Chicago, district courts here, have the discretion to consider the disparities created by the existence of these programs elsewhere.
But that's the same effect, isn't it? Doesn't the district effectively become a fast-track district?
So the district doesn't become a fast-track district because once this court gives sentencing courts this discretion, sentencing courts can make all sorts of determinations. Plenty of sentencing courts are going to determine, actually, as a court determined in the Ortega-Vargas case, which was before this court in the spring, they're going to say, I don't think there's a problem with these disparities. I find them completely warranted. Or secondly, I think there are other reasons why I want to give this defendant a within-guideline sentence under 3553A. I think a within-guideline sentence is necessary to protect the public, separate and apart from any fast-track disparity concerns.
So among the many judges of that district, then you could have a whole variety of outcomes, which is real disparity, isn't it?
Your Honor, I recognize that concern, and I recognize the concern that this court may have in that way. But the fact is that when the Supreme Court gave district courts discretion, for example, under Kimbrough, to take into consideration the crack powder disparity, Kimbrough recognized that that's necessarily going to result in some disparities. It's going to result in different district courts giving different ratios, different district courts determining either the disparity is warranted or unwarranted. But the interesting thing that Kimbrough pointed out is that's going to be then an issue for district courts to deal with. District courts are going to have to look at the other district courts around them and truly determine whether they are going to sentence one way or another way based on what other district courts are doing. But Kimbrough clearly put that discretion in the hands of the district courts.
But the legislation here puts the discretion in the Attorney General, and the Attorney General has a process within the executive branch to make that determination as to which districts need this kind of treatment. That's not a judicial decision, is it?
It's not a judicial decision to determine that a certain district should have a fast-track program. I agree with Your Honor on that. What is a judicial decision, however, is the question of whether, in light of the fact that there's a fast-track program elsewhere, a judge here finds that there's a disparity that this judge, under its authority under A6, finds is unwarranted. I think it's very important that the Supreme Court, in addressing this A6 question of who determines what's warranted and unwarranted, the Supreme Court has repeatedly held in Kimbrough, Booker, and Gall that it is in the that the district court is supposed to make that determination about what is warranted and what is unwarranted.
Are your clients here really in the same positions as those defendants in fast-track districts? Specifically, in fast-track, you have to give up your right to take an appeal, don't you?
Yes, Your Honor, that is true.
And clearly have not. Your clients clearly have not.
So in this circumstance, that is correct, Your Honor. The situation is that Mr. Sanchez-Gonzalez waived almost every single one of the rights that are given up by defendants in fast-track districts. He waived indictment. He pled guilty. He didn't file any pretrial motions. He gave up his right to appeal everything except for this particular issue, Your Honor. And Judge Kennelly actually had previously ruled that the fact that a defendant is willing to give up certain rights tends to undercut the argument that he's not similarly situated. This was an issue also, Your Honor. This question of similarly situated and waiver of rights is a question for the district court. Again, that is a question of fact. And Judge Kennelly clearly held that Mr. Sanchez-Gonzalez was similarly situated to defendants in fast-track districts.
Your other defendant didn't give up similar rights.
He actually did as well, actually. He gave up, Mr. Reyes-Hernandez gave up all of the same rights. In essence, what Mr. Reyes-Hernandez did is he didn't waive the right to indictment, but he pled guilty, he didn't file any motions, and he only appealed this issue. So he absolutely is on all fours in that regard. But in Mr. Sanchez-Gonzalez's case, Judge Kennelly didn't require a waiver, right, Your Honor? And the government didn't make this argument to the district court. The government didn't ask for a waiver there. So they should be precluded from saying he didn't waive his rights and asking Your Honors to find him not similarly situated on that ground. In addition, there is this concern with asking defendants to waive rights when they aren't given the concomitant benefit. So that the First Circuit has said, lacking the benefit of a bargain inherent in fast-track programs, a defendant cannot be expected to renounce his right to mount a defense. And I should also point out something about 3553A6, which is, by its own terms, it doesn't require a showing of a relinquishment of rights, right? Because A6 has two provisions that would make someone similarly situated. Did this person commit the same offense conduct, and does this person have similar criminal history? Doesn't address this question of waiver. And finally, any offer to waive would have been futile because the government wouldn't have given him the benefit that he is seeking. And it just seems to create a real notice problem to apply ex post some sort of requirement for Mr. Sanchez-Gonzalez that he should have waived his rights.
I don't understand why you think Kimbrough has such an impact in this case. It seems the Seventh Circuit has held that the disparate sentences that result from the creation of these fast-track programs is not unreasonable because there are conditions in those areas where they're set up that basically require some sort of disposition so we can process these cases. In Kimbrough, the Supreme Court has looked at the way crack is treated versus powder cocaine and concluded that is not a very reasonable difference in treatment, and so district courts are free to consider it in arriving at a just sentence. Why do you think Kimbrough requires that the Seventh Circuit revisit the question of whether the fast-track offer or presents an unreasonable disparate sentence here?
Your Honor, let me explain my analogy here to Kimbrough, which is that in the crack powder context, what happened is the commission proposed eliminating the disparity entirely. And what the Supreme Court did, this was the disparity that it had incorporated from the drug statute into the guidelines. And what the Supreme Court did was, actually first, I should say what Congress did. Congress When the Sentencing Commission made this proposal, Congress explicitly rejected the Sentencing Commission's proposal by statute and clearly stated crack sentences should be higher than powder sentences. And then after that, every time the Commission tried to change the disparity again or eliminate it, Congress ignored those requests. So there appears to be a clear intent by Congress in that instance to maintain a disparity. And yet Kimbrough said Congress had not required the Commission and courts to maintain the disparity, and this was really important. They said because, quote, the drug statute says nothing about the appropriate sentences within, unquote, the statutory minima and the statutory maxima. So the Supreme Court said we decline to read any implicit directive into that congressional silence. And the analogy here is that the PROTECT Act provision is likewise silent about the appropriate sentences within the statutory range for illegal reentry. So, and this was one of the reasons the First Circuit actually reversed its prior precedent. So, and here's the point. Nothing in the text of the statute, in the text of the PROTECT Act, explicitly limits the discretion of courts in districts without fast-track programs.
But can't an appellate court, looking at a program like this, say this is a reasonable program? The disparate impact it has in sentences are not unreasonable because we need to do something like this in certain districts. And isn't that what the Seventh Circuit and those other circuits that have rejected this challenge, isn't that what they've said?
Well, my sense of what the Seventh Circuit has said is just slightly different, which is that the Seventh Circuit has said Congress warranted these disparities, and therefore we're going to find that a court cannot say they're unwarranted under A6. So that takes off the table the question for the A6 question from district courts. That's my sense of what this court did in Martinez-Martinez and Galicia-Cardenas. But in answer to Your Honor's question essentially, well, can't the Seventh Circuit then warrant these disparities separate and apart from whether Congress has warranted them, which was the answer, the thing I was responding to. I'm going to finish this response, and then I'll reserve the rest of my time. But in response to that question, the Supreme Court has clearly held that district courts are supposed to determine what disparities are warranted and unwarranted under A6. That's a district court function. And the Supreme Court requires circuit courts to give deference to district courts' decisions about disparities and review for reasonableness. It seems hard to say that this is a completely unreasonable, as a matter of law, it would be completely unreasonable to find this disparity unwarranted because reasonable minds can clearly disagree about whether it's warranted or unwarranted. I mean, the First and Third Circuits have said it's legitimate to find that this is an unwarranted disparity. And so a number of judges also have criticized it as unwarranted for reasons about how the programs are maintained and the fact that there are fast-track programs in districts with very low numbers of cases and then there aren't programs in districts with high numbers of cases like the Southern District of Florida. So, and even the Sentencing Commission has raised concerns that these programs actually create more disparities than unwarranted disparities. So I suppose this court would have the power to warrant all fast-track disparities across the board as a matter of law. But, Your Honor, considering that there are so many questions, areas in which that question is left to the district court and in which circuit courts don't make those kind of blanket rules, areas like co-defendant disparity, areas like the crack powder disparity, all of those areas are areas where it's left to the district court to make that determination. We would ask this court to do the same in this instance as well. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Lutris?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Andrew Boutros on behalf of the United States. The absence of a fast-track program in the Northern District of Illinois does not create an unwarranted sentencing disparity vis-a-vis those judicial districts where such a program exists. The Seventh Circuit has concluded as much repeatedly, and Kimbrough has not disturbed this court's precedent. Congress expressly authorized the creation of the disparity in the PROTECT Act when it authorized the creation of fast-track programs.
Did Congress state the rationality in the legislative history or otherwise for the fast-track in those districts that have it?
It did, Your Honor, and Martinez-Martinez goes into that. And the rationale that Congress gave in the associator, the accompanying legislative history, has to do with benefit to the government, not benefit to the defendants, but instead it has to do with allocation of resources to the government and the ability of the government to prosecute and to go through and to to have a mechanism in place to go through all these cases.
They don't have to build holding facilities, do they?
Or at least to try to minimize that. That's right, Your Honor. And as a result, because this is something that, as this Court has concluded, was created and authorized by Congress, it simply, as a matter of law, cannot be unwarranted.
Did the Attorney General need that legislation to have that kind of control over these programs?
I think, Your Honor, what happened, as I understand it, is that Congress responded to what it saw was practices that were developing in certain districts. And as this Court's case law pointed out, in California, in one judicial district alone, there were 600,000 instances of illegal reentry offenders. And Congress saw what those districts, the solutions that they were trying to come up with, and Congress intervened and said, we will come and tell you that you can have this mechanism in place, this fast-track mechanism. And with the approval of the Attorney General, the United States Attorney, with certain conditions in place.
Couldn't the AG have done that on his or her own with binding agreements and things of that nature without having that legislative authority?
I believe the Department of Justice could have, and that would bring it purely into the prosecutorial discretion realm of what of how prosecutors would then deal with such cases in resolving these cases. And so here, one of the benefits is that we have not only just congressional explicit authority, but we also have the prosecutorial discretion aspect to this case as well. And certainly that would be a separate and independent reason, as Your Honor, I think, is suggesting, that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice could have used to create these programs for disposing or to process these cases.
Are there DOJ guidelines with regard to which districts or how a district would qualify for fast track?
There are internal memoranda, Your Honor, and the government has submitted, and I believe the defense as well, the internal memoranda that goes into some of the criteria that needs to be established in order and that the U.S. Attorney has to demonstrate in order for the U.S. Attorney to receive approval. And, in fact, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, specifically the Deputy Attorney General, who has been delegated this authority, can reject a request.
Let's say I'm in a district that does have a fast-track program, and Prosecutor A uses it on Defendant A, and Prosecutor B elects not to use it on Defendant B, and I see them, and they look in all respects similar. Am I precluded from considering the fact that Defendant A got this break from giving a similar break to Defendant B?
I think you would, Your Honor, and I think the reason for it is because it goes to the issue of prosecutorial discretion. And if, as long as it's not for an improper or discriminatory reason,
But prosecutorial discretion extends to sentencing now?
I think prosecutorial discretion, Your Honor, goes to the issue of, because for there, as I understand it, the fast track mechanism would allow for cases to receive certain sentences below, and in certain charge bargaining districts, it would involve actual charges being brought in a particular manner versus another manner. But the sentencing discretion here, Your Honor, is and I think this was somewhat addressed in the Ninth Circuit case of recent that the government cites to, is that whether it's inter-district or intra-district disparities, that these are still all disparities that are created by prosecutorial discretion and created by Congress.
But a court can consider your refusal to give a 5K1.1 reduction and can consider the cooperation of an individual as a factor under 3553A. Why couldn't the disparity that Judge Griesbach talks about be considered?
And I think, Your Honor, you just touched exactly on the point, which is that dealing with the 5K, if the government doesn't file the motion, the court can't take it into account under 5K itself, but certainly under, you know, the nature of the defendant and the characteristics.
Or disparate sentences? The need to avoid disparate sentences? I can take it under consideration there. And aren't we right back where we started?
But I think, Your Honor, in this case, when you look at what Congress did in the PROTECT Act and the fact that it in fact conditions it upon if the Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney have made their district a fast-track district. The PROTECT Act language falls really squarely. The only area where it really falls is the A6 category. And therefore, The other areas are not really at issue because they don't go to the individual defendant that's before the court. And 3553A, the heart of it, has to do with the individual defendant who is standing before the court. If one took the defense's argument to its logical conclusion, suppose the Northern District of Illinois had a policy of no 851s whatsoever. And then suppose the Southern District of Florida had a policy of always 851s, no matter the case. All of a sudden, a district court judge here in our district could say, I object to the fact that the U.S. Attorney's Office doesn't use 851s. They need to be more harsh. Therefore, regardless of the individual characteristics of this defendant and regardless of who stands in front of me, I will employ the process that's invoked in the Southern District of Florida. I will double his sentence for no other reason than just because that's how Florida does it. If that happened in this district, and if this court approved the use of fast-track disparities, the race to the bottom, I would submit to the court that this court would have to approve and endorse the race to the top. And that argument or that particular sentence that the district court judge imposed in this hypothetical would have to be found to be reasonable. The government submits that would be an unreasonable sentence because it has nothing to do with the defendant who stands before that court. In the same way that a race to the bottom would be inappropriate, a race to the top as well would be inappropriate. I think in conclusion, Your Honor, unless there are further questions, the government would ask that the court, the government would submit its brief and rely on the arguments contained in the brief and ask that the court uphold both the sentences in United States v. Sanchez-Gonzalez and those in Reyes-Hernandez as reasonable. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you. The government argues that these disparities cannot be unwarranted because they are created and authorized by Congress. This flies in the face of Kimbrough. The only way Congress can expressly limit district court discretion is to say that district courts may not go below the illegal reentry guideline based on fast-track disparities. That's what Congress would have to say in order to expressly limit discretion. They would essentially have to make the low end of the illegal reentry guideline into a mandatory minimum in the context of fast-track disparities. And Congress's only statement of any intent to limit the discretion of courts in non-fast-track districts comes from the legislative history, which is discussed in Martinez-Martinez. As this court held in that case, Congress says that it does not confer authority to depart downward on an ad hoc basis in individual cases in the PROTECT Act's fast-track provision. But there are two reasons why this statement does not operate as an express limitation or express warrant of the disparity. First, this is far less expressed than Congress's clear statutory rejection of the crack powder, the Commission's efforts to lower the crack powder disparity, which wasn't enough to warrant that disparity. And secondly, this restriction is nowhere in the text of the statute. So maybe Congress thought it was unnecessary to tell courts that they couldn't depart downward because the guidelines were mandatory then and the purpose of the PROTECT Act was to limit downward departures, but Booker made the guidelines advisory and rendered all those restrictions unconstitutional. And so that's what would have to happen for Congress to warrant the disparities. And none of the three circuits that have upheld the limitation on district court discretion have actually found that these disparities are explicitly or expressly warranted by Congress. Your Honor, in addition, this discussion of what the government's concern about prosecutorial discretion, granting judges discretion to take fast-track disparities into account doesn't violate the separation of powers in any way. And this we can see in Booker. Booker lets district court judges avoid creating disparities by sentencing defendants based on their real conduct. And I see that my time is up. Unless there are any other questions, I would simply ask that the court, the judgments below be reversed and the cases remanded. Thank you very much.
I see you took this case by appointment. The clinic did?
I did, Your Honor.
All right. And the court appreciates your vigorous representation of your clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And that concludes the calendar for this morning.